Good morning. This is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Pantograph from Monday, February 23rd, 2026. From the front page, Illinois State University, Realms Rage for Friendship Magic. Foam-clad role players charge into battle at Wolfpack Opener Event. By D. Jack Elkery. Normal. The four armies gathered upon the plains of Horton Fieldhouse, bearing with them weapons and armor, fulfilling the prophecy foretold, and forevermore to battle for the realm of Belagarth. Silence befell them. As the herald's unfurling of his golden standard, the mighty and brave roared and charged their sworn foes, until none were left standing. And then, called back to the glory of the battlefield, each returned to their post, ready to clash steel once more. Such the battle raged from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Illinois State University's Horton Fieldhouse in the annual Wolfpack Opener, hosted by ISU-registered student organization and medieval combat club, Wolfpack. It's one of the biggest indoor days events in the Midwest, said Nigel Waite, 22, a senior finance major at ISU. Waite, who uses the moniker Magin, is the student club's president or warlord. We are based in Bloomington Normal and we invite other realms over, Waite said. So some people are from Champaign, some are from Peoria, some people are from other states. More than 400 people attended last year's event, he said. Wolfpack is just one of hundreds of realms within Belagarth, a community of live-action role-playing groups that span the U.S. Some people have been part of Belagarth for over 20 years, like former Wolfpack warlord Robert Clark, who goes by Theros the Large. The Wolfpack Opener is our first big event of the year, where everybody who's been pent up all winter is dragging all their gear out of the closet and coming out and hanging out with all the weirdos that they know and love, Clark said. It's about the community, like the fact that we can all be whatever, whoever we want here is magic. It is literal magic. There are 20 realms in Illinois alone, according to Belagarth's wiki. Players in each realm create their own gear, which consists of handheld weapons, plastic cores wrapped in foam, padded arrows, bows, shields, helmet, and armor. They use a rule book called the Book of War that defines what is an acceptable piece of equipment and how players should act on the battlefield. To make it simple, each struck limb counts as 1 point, and striking the torso counts as 2 points, Waite said. If a player loses 2 points, they lose that round and have to leave the battlefield, he said. Striking the hands, the feet, or the head is not allowed, with one exception. You can hit your opponent in the head with an arrow, Waite said, but it has to be a half-drawn shot at close range. If someone gets hurt, players shout, "Hold!" and everyone takes a knee, raising their weapons above their heads, while the referees or marshal check on the player and escort them off the field, Clark said. But it's not about actually hurting one another, Waite said. It's about being active. This is the perfect blend between having fun, being a nerd, and also getting out and being more active in life, he said. Character customization. Most players make their own gear and costumes, like Tyler Goplin, called Sigurd, who traveled all the way from Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, to whack people with sticks. I was inspired by 14th to 15th century fighters, some a little earlier, Goplin said. He used a two-handed long weapon, like a spear, and wore a handmade tunic with buttons shaped like fish. But his helmet was his most prized creation, he said. The helmet is a replica of the Hirmundu helm from Norway, he said. My wife helped me put it together. It took about 6 months total to get everything together. But players don't need to be that dedicated, said the RSO's staff advisor, Danny Hoover. The company itself is very welcoming, and that's what I like about it, he said. You can just be a stick jock that just, you know, wants to come out and hit people with padded sticks. Or you can be a Lothar of the Hills people who has a whole 50-page backstory. Regardless, it's about finding like-minded folks and having fun, Goplin said. We all want to stay active. We all, at some point or another, have definitely watched a Lord of the Rings movie and thought, hey, that looks super fun. Why not go do it? And there were several pictures that are showing this Wolfpack event, basically showing people in their costumes, their padded weapons and shields that are moving around and attacking each other. Also from the front page, two students draft vape disposal bill by Jenna Schweikert, Capital News, Illinois. A bill drafted by two Illinois high school students would require producers of electronic smoking devices, like vapes, to manage the disposal of the devices through stewardship programs. The programs would collect used smoking devices and recycle or safely dispose of the parts. Producers can either establish their own stewardship program or, with other producers, form a statewide producer responsibility organization. Producers would also be required to finance the programs and inform consumers of the disposal options. Andrew Diaz and Allison Hovaniak, students at Pontiac High School, worked with Representative Kelly Cassidy, Democrat Chicago, and the Illinois Environmental Council to draft and introduce the bill. The students came up with the idea through an assignment in a government class. As we realize that it's a widespread problem and that there are vapes all over the environment, we ended up deciding we wanted to make this a legislation, Hovaniak said, emphasizing the longevity of the bill if it is passed into law. It's not just something that will just go away after a while. Meeting a need. Electronic smoking devices, also known as e-cigarettes or vapes, pose environmental and public health risks due to the batteries, metals, plastics, and hazardous substances such as nicotine in them, said Jed Walling, CEO of the IEC, a Springfield-based organization that represents environmental groups and nonprofits. As they are not recyclable due to the materials, most of the devices end up in landfills. Because of their growing popularity and single-use nature, they are an increasing concern among environmental activists. The stewardship programs proposed in the bill would operate similarly to other waste disposal initiatives, like those for electronics. The goal is to provide an incentive for consumers and producers to care about the disposal of the devices, Walling said. I just think that there are consumers that care about this, and there will be efforts by the industry to try to make certain goals, where they need to collect these, so they're going to go out of their way to try to get more, Walling said. This might mean different education or different incentives that they offer consumers, or maybe just putting it in convenient places for people to be able to dispose of them. The bill provides no enforcement provisions. Brand owners, such as the primary owners, and manufacturers of the devices would be required to establish a program to join a PRO within 2 years of the bill's effective date. If the brand owner can't be identified or isn't subject to state jurisdiction, the responsibility falls to the importer, then the distributor, then the seller. The programs must be financed by the producers, or PROs, and are subject to appeal by the Illinois Environmental Protection Agencies. Producers out of compliance could be subject to a civil penalty of up to $10,000. Diaz and Hovaniak settled on their idea after they were tasked with creating a project that would impact their community. Through discussions with their parents and teacher, Paul Ritter, they decided to draft a piece of legislation about vape disposal. The pair first reached out to Kennedy in the fall, who directed them to work with the IEC in drafting the bill. "I'm concerned about a lot of different impacts of vaping, to be perfectly honest with you," Cassidy said. "These batteries are just getting thrown into the garbage. There's a lot of reasons to want to control these products." For Cassidy, working with the students on an issue she is already concerned about was a no-brainer, she said. "We definitely want legislators to know it's something that the youth does care about. It's something that we want to change," Hoviniak said. "We talk about it a lot, I know, especially when you become seniors. And when we go into college, vapes are such a widely talked about concept. And representatives and senators don't really know that." The pair said they are deeply motivated to accomplish their goal. "It's definitely something that taught us that we need to think about what we're doing and put intent in everything we're doing," Hoviniak said. "Everything you put into something, you will most likely get out. And I feel like the experience, it's life-changing, honestly." Cassidy filed the bill January 29th. It was referred to the committee on February 2nd and is awaiting a hearing. "It is truly a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity in this class," Diaz said. "It really is an eye-opening experience because you will learn more about the government in this class than you ever will in civics." Turning to page 2, today's Flick Fact. Question. The historic Livingston building with a rooftop garden on the south side of Bloomington's downtown square, today its first floor is the pub Elroy's, is more than 120 years old and also a great indicator of inflation over the past century. How much did it cost to build that entire building in 1902? Answer. All of $36,000, built under the ownership of Ike Livingston. In the 1920s through the 50s, its rooftop garden was one of the hot spots in all of central Illinois, with hundreds dancing the night away on its roof on weekends. How time flies. 100 years ago, February 23, 1926, work of collecting money to pay for the right-of-way on Route 33, the state bond issue hard road between Bloomington and Farmer City, has been commenced, and the response from Bloomington businessmen has, as usual, been generous. Officials regard it as unfair that the payment must come from the same little group of public-spirited citizens. 75 years ago, February 23, 1951, plans for inaugurating a program to care for children who have been partially paralyzed through brain injuries were outlined. Preliminary arrangements were made for this eventual care of this type of child in the program to begin sometime late spring at St. Joseph's Hospital. 50 years ago, February 23, 1976, the chances for Ronald Reagan capturing 40% of the Republican vote in March 16th primary look pretty good, Illinois Representative Donald L. Totten told a group of Reagan backers. 25 years ago, February 23, 2001, Michael Mouse spent his lunch break at a funeral. "I'm just trying to hold back the tears because I can't believe he's gone," said the mechanic with Clay Dooley Auto Service Center in Bloomington. "I've been a fan since I was little. And now all I can do is look for some closure. It feels so personal for me. It's got to be really hard on the family." Mouse was among about 50 mourners at East Lawn Funeral Home in Bloomington on Thursday, watching a televised memorial service for NASCAR legend Dale Earnhardt. Also from the front page, primary elections, GOP Senate hopefuls press case to flip Durbin's seat red, by Brendan Moore, Capital News, Illinois. If the Democratic primary to replace retiring Senator Dick Durbin has been the main event in Illinois politics over the past year, the Republican contest has largely played the undercard. But for at least one night, the race finally came under the bright lights. During an hour-long debate hosted by ABC Chicago in partnership with Univision and the League of Women Voters on Wednesday, February 11th, three candidates in the six-person field pitched themselves as best equipped to flip the seat red. After more than four decades in Democratic hands, the candidates, information technology professional Casey Chlebik, corporate attorney Jeannie Evans, and former Illinois Republican Party chairman Don Tracy, stopped short of criticizing Donald Trump directly, but registered their disagreement with his cause to nationalize voting and his approach to tariffs. The last Republican to hold Illinois' Class II U.S. Senate seat was Senator Charles Percy, who served three terms until his defeat by then-Democratic U.S. Representative Paul Simon in 1984. Simon was later succeeded by Durbin, who has held the seat since 1997. Senator Mark Kirk was the last Republican to represent Illinois in the upper chamber, serving a single term from 2011 to 2017, and losing his re-election bid to now U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. This year, the GOP race is wide open. A January poll found 84% of primary voters were undecided. Tracy led the field with just 6% support, while no other candidate registered more than 3% support. Tracy, a Springfield attorney who has served as party chair from 2021 to 2024, said the open contest presents a terrific opportunity for the GOP to win back a statewide office, but it will not be easy in a state that's become safely Democratic in recent federal elections. It will be an uphill dogfight because the Democrats will have a lot more money than a Republican candidate. Tracy, an unsuccessful 2010 GOP candidate for lieutenant governor, said. And for that reason, it is certainly no job for a political novice. Tracy is mostly self-funding his campaign, having loaned himself $2 million in August. He had roughly the same amount on hand at the beginning of the year, according to federal campaign finance reports, placing him far above the other candidates in the race. Evans, a Chicago attorney who specializes in antitrust law, was his closest competitor, starting the year with nearly $300,000 on hand, after raising more than $500,000, about 80% of it self-funded. Chlebik, a native of Poland who immigrated to the U.S. as a teenager in the late 60s, was an unsuccessful candidate for the GOP nominations for U.S. Senate in 2022 and 2020. He's self-funded to the tune of about $100,000. Unlike Tracy and Chlebik, Evans' name has never appeared on the ballot before. She used that to cast herself as the political outsider in the race. It's time for a fresh face of the Republican Party in Illinois, Evans said. I am ready to work hard to motivate people with conservative values across our entire state to come out to vote in November. The issues. None of the three candidates directly answered when asked to identify an area in which they disagreed with Trump, who has lost Illinois by double-digit margins in three consecutive elections. A recent poll placed his approval rating at 39% in Illinois, although 84% of Republican voters approved of his job performance. However, disagreements with the president emerged when specific topics came up. Evans said tariffs imposed by Trump achieved some good results, but acknowledged that she's a free market economist who believes they should only be used in specific situations or to achieve certain goals in the short term. Tracy said the U.S. has been subsidizing the world, including China and Europe, for way too long, but the jury's still out on if Trump's tariff regime will achieve its policy aims of more equitable trade deals and the onshoring of manufacturing jobs. Schlabach said tariffs are a tool that shouldn't be used in an arbitrary fashion. After the Supreme Court ruled 6-3 that he didn't have the emergency power to impose many sweeping tariffs, Trump signed an executive order Friday night that enabled him to bypass Congress and impose a 10% tax on imports from around the world. Those tariffs would be limited to just 150 days unless they are extended legislatively. All three candidates said they would support a proposal that would require voters to present valid photo ID to vote, but stopped short of supporting Trump's recent call to nationalize elections, which are run by states under the U.S. Constitution. With 50 states, it's hard to hack, Tracy said. Evans said she sees some room for federal standards, but supports states running their own elections. Schlabach also stressed the importance of institutions like the United Nations and NATO that have come under fire by Trump and some Republicans in recent years. We have to be careful as far as removing our relationship with the rest of the world, Schlabach said. We have to make sure that international institutions are preserved because it serves our interests. Minimum wage, other topics. The federal minimum wage has been $7.25 per hour since 2009, while Illinois' has been $15 for about a year. All three major Democratic candidates in the race have called for the federal wage to increase anywhere from $17 to $25. But the Republicans said they are just fine leaving it at $7.25. Tracy said he was concerned that a wage increase would impact employment opportunities for teenagers and developmentally disabled people. It's the bottom rung of the success ladder, and that's why the focus is misplaced on the minimum wage, Tracy said. We need to be focusing on real wages. Tracy also said new requirements for food assistance in the Big Beautiful Bill Act signed by Trump last year were long overdue, citing too many able-bodied Americans out of the labor force living off welfare. Evans said she would propose to peel back regulations and taxes that burden companies instead of raising the price floor. Evans and Tracy each said they would not support a national abortion ban and leave that decision to individual states. Schlabach did not answer the question. All support the U.S. staying in the UN and NATO. Tracy said he supports Trump's pardons of people convicted of crimes connected to the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, which disrupted the certification of Joe Biden's 2020 Electoral College victory and reported in injuries and deaths to police officers and extensive physical damage to the building. Evans sidestepped the question, saying, "It's 2026. I'm moving forward." Schlabach said he did not support the pardons. Schlabach, Evans, and Tracy were chosen to participate based on factors such as fundraising and having a functioning campaign website. R. Carrie Caparelli, Pamela Denise Long, and Jimmy Lee Tillman II are also seeking the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate. Only early voting has begun, and the primary election is March 17th. From the sports section, college men's basketball, Illinois, Tough Ending for the Illini in Los Angeles, by Bob Rasmussen, News Gazette. Brad Underwood's number 10-ranked Illinois basketball team entered Saturday's game at UCLA, California Dreamin' of a West Coast sweep, and fell short. Donovan Dent's basket at the buzzer gave UCLA a 95-94 overtime win at historic Pauley Pavilion. "It was a tough ending," Underwood said on postgame radio. "The one guy who could beat us drove the length of the court." Keaton Wagler had given Illinois a lead with 4 seconds left. Illinois led by as many as 23 points in the first half before UCLA went on a run before intermission to cut the gap to 7 at the break. A good college basketball game, Underwood said. They fought back and they competed. You're on the road, you're tired, you've got to fight. The ball didn't go in. UCLA tied the game 56-56 with 14:45 left in the game. It stayed close most of the rest of the way. One of those nights, a tough loss, Underwood said. Former Illini Sky Clark made an impact for the Bruins, coming off the bench to hit double figures despite foul trouble. He fouled out in overtime. Next up for Illinois, a visit from number one Michigan on Friday night. Doubt the Wolverines will remain in the top spot after Saturday's close neutral site loss to Duke. Doesn't matter. It's still one of the biggest games at the State Farm Center in years. A scary moment for Illinois with 8:22 left in the first half. Freshman star Wagler fell hard on his shoulder and had to leave the game. He returned later and appeared no worse for wear. He finished the opening 20 minutes with 3 points and took only one shot from the floor. Some national news, The Digest. Greenland says no to hospital ship offer. U.S. President Donald Trump said he would deploy a hospital ship to Greenland, alleging that many people are sick and not receiving care, even though both of the Navy's hospital ships are currently docked at a shipyard in Alabama. Trump's announcement prompted a defense on Sunday of Denmark and Greenland's healthcare system from their leaders, and it was the latest point of friction with the American leader, who has frequently talked about seizing the massive Arctic territory. "It's a no thank you from Greenland here," said Icelandic Prime Minister Jens Frederik Nielsen. Trump's post about a hospital came after Denmark's military said Saturday it evacuated a crew member of a U.S. submarine off the coast of Greenland for urgent medical treatment. NASA moon rocket going back to hangar, Cape Canaveral. Grounded until at least April, NASA's giant moon rocket is headed back to the hangar this week for more repairs before astronauts climb aboard. The space agency said Sunday it's targeting Tuesday for the slow 4-mile trek across Kennedy Space Center, weather permitting. NASA had barely finished a repeat fueling test Thursday to ensure dangerous hydrogen fuel leaks were plugged when the rocket's helium system malfunctioned. Mike Huckabee. An uproar continued Sunday after the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, said Israel has a right to much of the Middle East, as more Arab and Muslim countries objected, and the U.S. said his comments were taken out of context. Mexico. The Mexican army killed the leader of the Jalisco New Generation Cartel, Nemesio Ruben Aseguera Cervantes, El Mencho, on Sunday, decapitating what had been Mexico's most powerful cartel and giving the government its biggest prize yet to show the Trump administration its efforts. European Union. Hungary threatened to block a new package of European Union sanctions against Russia and stall efforts to help Ukraine until Russian oil deliveries to Hungary resume. The EU's foreign ministers are set to meet Monday in Brussels. We'll take a short break right now and return with the second half hour of the reading of the Pantograph from Monday, February 23rd, 2026. Please stay tuned.